we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Jordan, I remember a few years ago when Chris Christie was running for governor of New Jersey, and he appeared before some union group, I think of public employees or something, and when he got up in front of them before he could speak, they kept booing him and booing him and booing him. And he wouldn't, they wouldn't be quiet. And then after a couple of minutes, he stepped from behind the podium, took his prepared speech, ripped it in half, and said, "I just don't get it. You people know in your heart of hearts, for the last 30 years, Republican and Democratic governors have lied to you and sworn that you would get all these things that we cannot afford. And you knew it. Yet I'm up here today telling you we can't afford it, and I'm the bad guy. I just don't get it." What was remarkable is, supposedly, that led to a wonderful dialogue between these public unions and him, and he as the governor, because the lies are undeniable. And that's kind of I think a wonderful example of what needs to happen in our country, because all of the lies that everybody knows that's right before their eyes, we just all need to settle down and say, we're not going to buy into them anymore. So yeah. With that, Jordan, what do you think?
No, I think it, again, goes, obviously, that probably was before kind of the Twitter sphere becoming this kind of crazy place for woke people. Chris Christie did a good job locally coming to the realization of his state needing reform. The problem is, you know, reform is not even really a word I think anybody mentions anymore. And that, again, you know, goes back to what I think most people live in is a world of magical thinking where, you know, these dollars are going to appear or these solutions are going to appear without hard work or sacrifices. And I think that's, again, not good for the coming generation. Funny enough, I mean, this is kind of off topic, but there's an article recently talking about how there's a huge new market for toys for adults, which I think gives us a bad indication of where our younger generation is going, given the fact that instead of doing hard things like having families and building futures and passing those on, a lot of adults would rather build Legos. And I think that is, you know, again, these people have jobs, they work, but after work, they would rather be selfish and focus on their, you know, their daily enjoyment as opposed to realizing that, you know, sometimes it takes hard work to have outcomes that are something that people desire. And I think that's kind of dovetails in with what Chris Christie was saying, which is I'm going to have to tell you the hard truth. I'm not going to, you know, bring you a bunch of goodies and promises that I won't keep. Instead, I'm going to come in here with the knowledge and the information to say, hey, we got to solve this. And if we don't solve it, all of us are out. So,
yeah, I mean, it's the word that is so apparently void in our dialogue these days and for the past generation, maybe, is the word responsible. Nobody wants to be responsible because it always comes back in the scaredy world, the cowardly world that we are trapped in, that people don't want to be held legally responsible. When in fact, much more importantly than that, we are morally responsible for things that our culture simply doesn't want to be involved with. And it's very amazing. It's just every time you turn around, if the good Lord gives you the eyes to see and ears to hear, in my way of looking at it, even though there are several lost people that do know, well, do understand the dangers of COVID lies. But the point is, that if you just stop and say, I want to be responsible, I want to do what the things that I am responsible, I want to take care for the things I am responsible for. Boy, howdy, that would be a new day in America. And I think there's no better example of it recently than the Twitter. The people, half the workforce for Twitter, finally had to show up to work, and they couldn't do it. They didn't know what to do, and they had to go into work without their free coffee and whatever else they were getting before on the scam they were running at Twitter.
Yeah, and again, at the same time that they were making decisions on, you know, people who were putting themselves out there to try to help people make good decisions, and they were sipping their coffee and banning people based on their own ideological or on their CDC preferred narrative. I think that was one of the things that's pretty interesting that was revealed today. And again, the guy who actually wrote this kind of thread on the Twitter files on COVID, and the guy writes for The Atlantic and New York Magazine, Wired, and The New York Times. He was vilified during much of COVID because he was the guy that was realistic about the fact that a lot of these studies and the things that were being put up by the CDC and through the mainstream media were just all out bullcrap. People thought he had some ideological bent, but the funny thing is he's pretty much a classic liberal that was also a journalist that did his job. And I think the fact that he did his job was proven today when they looked through the files of what both administrations, interestingly enough, were doing. And so it wasn't just Trump or Biden, it was both. Trump was kind of on the other side, making people not be alarmist and trying to knock down the people that were saying there were shortages anywhere. Well, that again is pretty obvious that there were shortages in places. So I'm not really sure how that helps you. But then Biden was on the other end, saying that anything didn't line up with the CDC, that they were going to kick him off. I mean, and these included Harvard professors, journalists. Not only that, people that were correct, as in the data that they were quoting was straight up, from the CDC. One of the funniest things I found was that they tried to ban President Trump because he said he was feeling good after he had had COVID. And their complaint was that shouldn't everyone, I will read you what they said, but basically they said everyone should be scared of COVID. And so they thought that, and this was from Jim Baker, who again worked for the Clinton White House, also was involved in trying to get Trump impeached. He sent an email October 5th, 2020, Yoel and Stacey, why isn't this POTUS tweet a violation of our COVID-19 policies, especially the phrase, don't be afraid of COVID? And then at least the Twitter executive or whoever these people are, Yoel and Stacey, they replied back and said, hey, Jim, adding you to the main thread on this subject. In short, this tweet is a broad, optimistic statement, period. It doesn't incite people to do something harmful, nor does it recommend against taking precautions. I mean, this is how nuts this ideology was. It was just the fact that the president said, don't be afraid. Imagine if, Churchill had Twitter, we probably would have lost World War II. FDR, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. That would have been taken down because obviously fear should be, feared more. I mean, it's mind-numbing. This is all the back. I mean, and I think there's lots more to come, but it's pretty nuts that, basically Zwig, as he finished his analysis of that, he said, information that challenged that view. So basically he says, Twitter made a decision via the political leanings of senior staff and government pressure that the public health authorities approach the pandemic, prioritizing mitigation over other concerns, was, in quotation marks, the science. Information that challenged that view, such as showing harms of vaccines or that could be perceived or downplaying the risk of COVID, especially to children, was subject to moderation and even suppression, no matter whether such views were correct or adopted abroad. And then he asks the question, what might this pandemic and its aftermath have looked like if there had been a more open debate on Twitter and other social media platforms, not to mention the mainstream press, about the origins of COVID, about lockdowns, about the true risk of COVID in kids, and much more? And again, that is the question. So debate is, first of all, as we'll probably talk about in a second, this whole kind of conspiracy theory world. I mean, conspiracy theories in themselves have lots of different shades, but a conspiracy means people conspiring against somebody else who has a different kind of, you know, part. I mean, they're basically against you. And all these things do is reveal that there was a conspiracy against anybody that thought differently than the few sainted people in government that were the only people that were allowed to have the knowledge of how viruses acted and how molecules moved. And I will tell you that that's a bad place to be.
Yeah, especially all of this. I guess they thought that they had such power and control that their narrative could overcome decades of virology and immunology science. And that was clearly their method of dealing with anything that went against their narrative and fear-based policies and plans that they had throughout the past 3 years. Lie after lie after lie. And so if you want to, I've got this article pulled up that you spoke of. Do you want to mention anything about that in particular?
No, I mean, we can talk about that in the next segment, but I think the more that we start to see on the vaccine is there are questions that needed to be asked that weren't asked. And the problem is, the problem is, it's one thing to do a study on 40,000 people and find out a signal and then analyze those people over a couple of years and see what the outcome is. It's very different to give it to billions of people. And I think when you started to see that at play and no questions raised, and not even the questions that were raised early. And that, what I mean is by that is the very people that were saying there's nothing wrong with this, or there's no possible bad outcome from, you know, rapid, you know, basically fast tracking a vaccine, months earlier would have said the exact opposite. They said it would take a long time, and anything that's done rapidly usually has consequences that we didn't see in the beginning. And I think, again, that's a lesson for all of us that, first of all, humans and human interaction, but humans even more, are immensely complex. And the reality is that as much as we think we are scientifically advanced, a lot of our advancement is based on things that have been proven over time, but a lot of times at the initial onset were wrong. And I think that's one of the things people have to learn. I mean, it's kind of annoying. It does delay, I mean, how quickly people do stuff, but it's the reality. And the problem is in that world, you definitely don't want to roll out a product. It's not like an operating system that can be fixed. I mean, we know how bad even, you know, Bill Gates did on Windows 95. You know, those things, once they're out of the bag, it's a lot easier to fix a computer system than it is the human body. So,
yeah, and you have to have humility when you're discussing and going into, you know, any endeavor really, but to think that you're going to be able to ramrod your way through a problem without ever taking a heed of the need for corrective action or any evidence that comes against you, it is bizarre. It's such a bizarre amount of hubris.
And we said that from the beginning, Stuart, was to vaccinate yourself out of a pandemic is madness.
Right.
I mean, it was, and it still is. I mean, it's
known that for centuries.
Yeah. I mean, it's never even been really discussed by even people of, you know, knowledge. I mean, in a sense, the reason that they were doing this crazy stuff in Wuhan was to have a vaccine already tested before a pandemic broke out. Not that I say that I agree with that at all, but the reason they were doing that is because they knew that vaccines in their infancy are, you know, very fickle fellows. I mean, it's, you know, if I had a dollar for how many patents there are by, you know, people in the vaccine world for a vaccine that didn't get approved, I'd be a wealthy man. I mean, it's not like they just throw one at the board and this is it. I mean, it's even the smartest people pick the wrong thing. And even in the body, not only does that, it responds in a way that they didn't even predict, that their lab would have told them something completely different.
Yeah, I think that is exactly the point that we before all of this disaster, you and I trusted how the FDA, without knowing, we believed the FDA knew what they were doing and were being above board and diligent and in their scientific methods. We now know clearly they have not been. They have been bought and paid for. But that's the conundrum we find ourselves in. What are we going to do now that we have, now that the foundations of science have been so corrupted over the last generation, at least? What do we do? What are the options available to us, given this, the lies? And I think it's interesting. I just earlier this evening saw one of Tucker Carlson's monologues from last week, and he said the year of 2022 is the year of the lies. And he talked about, obviously, the vaccine and all the COVID lies. And one of the things he quoted on there was a Lancet article from last week that says if you had, if you got infected with SARS-2 after the vaccine, you had a fourfold higher risk of hospitalization and or death compared to the unvaccinated. That was a Lancet article. I mean, he went through several of the lies of COVID, but then he talked about the FTX guy and he talked about the Ukraine and all the lies and deceptions, but he went through a list of many things. I don't think this is a one-off. I don't think 2022 is a one-off. I think 2022 is really a culmination of decades, of generation, at least one generation of the baby boomers having grown up in the deception and lies and errors of the 1960s, 70s, and 80s. And at the twilight of their career, this is what the whirlwind they are reaping, the whirlwind that they have created. And it is it's an astounding reality we're stuck with.
So we will be back after this break. Again, this is Dr. Jordan Vaughn, Dr. Stuart Tankersley with America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.
We know you love the versatility and portability of the Genesis Fogger, but sometimes you just want to set it and forget it. Well, we heard you. Introducing the UX4 HOCL Atomizer. This stationary unit quietly protects you and is perfect for smaller spaces. With over 250,000 units sold in Japan, it's now available in the United States. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to see the UX4 in action and receive a 15% discount on either Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
America Out Loud beats to the pulse of our nation. We know when you're angry, you're troubled, confused, glad, and thankful. We know you because we are you. Join us as we explore the most important issues of our time. We are America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
These days, every time you turn on the news, it seems like there's a new threat to your health.
maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity. Unlike other supplements that don't work, Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top and shoot it down, or mix it in water. Boost your immunity. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
So, as we talked about in the previous segment, the year of lies, one thing that comes to mind is the author of lies. And, you know, I think they have a lot to do with each other in terms of our countries, you know, going toward, you know, a secular, non, in many ways, rational view of human life. And it's funny to say rational, because you'd think that the rational people are the people that are the atheist, I guess. But in a sense, it's become the rational people are the people that believe in foundational moral values that exist prior to human existence. And I think that is, you know, the truth that the Bible gives us is important. And it is more than just a book of morals. It is a book of life to all of us. And in many ways, I think that's one of the biggest problems in our profession is the lack of basis for things they do. You know, when we think about why we were talking earlier about, you know, people doing stuff and worrying about consequences. And, you know, in my world, at least as a physician, I first evaluate what I think is the correct. Obviously, I look at it from a scientific perspective, but then I also think, what is the right thing to do for this patient? The right thing to do. Okay. Now, when that comes up against whether there is something, you know, that is legally obligating me to do something different, that is another discussion. But that's not the first discussion I have, whether it's legal or not, or whether I'll get away with it. It's whether it's right to be done. And I think very few people are looking at medicine that way. If I had a dollar for every patient I see now that says their doctor said they can't do it because of yada, 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 and I kind of think, well, first of all, I think that there's a lot of lack of courage in our profession, but also just the fact that they rationalize to that extent where they're thinking, can they legally do something even though it might be right for the patient? It again, worries me that, or I guess the regulatory body has become too strong. But second, where has our duty, again, the sovereign profession where we answer to God in many ways about what we do because we are handling his creation? I think that needs to be reevaluated. So what do you think about that, Stuart?
Yeah, no question. I think today's the article you're bringing forth today is a clear example of the lies and deceptions, the reality that we have to wake up to and say, you know, let's look around and see what foundations are in place that we need to build off of that are successful today, whether it is the collapsing church, certainly the collapsing financial structures, the lies and deceptions of our federal government, state government, local government, the education establishment, and of course the scientific establishment. And I was listening to Jordan Peterson last week. He gave a talk, and he made an astounding statement. He thinks that in the next 5 to 7 years, the university secondary education system in our country is going to implode on itself because of the rot that is at the core of that system. And of course, the COVID pandemic, where everybody was told to stay at home. They couldn't go to college and learn, exposed that you don't have to go to these places anymore and get an education. You can do it online and for much, much cheaper and not be corrupted by the garbage that's spewed out by the social sciences and now the hard sciences, the liberal arts and the hard sciences, all of it. We're kind of the theme of this last podcast of the year is live not by lies. We're pointing out the obvious lies, but we're encouraging people not to live by them. You don't have to buy into them. And of course, we've talked in the past about the solutions to this. But we wanted to bring in this segment an example of the evidence of their lies and harms that they have done with this important paper that, Jordan, you were mentioning.
Yes, so I think this is a good example of when a lot of people ask me what I think about the vaccine. Obviously, I think, did the first two shots have science behind them? And my answer to that is yes, they have some science behind them. They have at least a randomized control trial behind them. There was definitely a cherry-picked cohort. We know lots of people were kicked out of the trial because they developed things like death and not included in the trial. Death is one of those things when you develop it in a trial, they assume that it's not important for you to be in it, nor can you continue to you can't show up for the visits, I guess, Stuart. But
that's the new science, right?
Yeah. We're stuck with. but you know, the rationale was, you know, as probably profit oriented as it was, as well as using a technology that was, you know, relatively new in terms of its use, it was an interesting try. Okay, the difference was didn't happen over a long enough amount of time. And one thing that wasn't included in anything in that trial was whether somebody was going to get multiple additional shots on top of this. And I think this paper shows that knowledge was completely lacking. And instead, we have to find it out where billions of people have been injected with a third dose. And what does this third dose seem to do? Well, it seems to switch your antibodies toward a spike-specific IgG4 antibody. Sounds interesting. You'd think IgG4, what does that mean? Well, what that means is it is a antibody that is typically binds well, but it doesn't do a darn good ability. It really doesn't activate your immune system to clear the virus. And I could have kind of told people that based on the data that we had this summer, looking at boosted people and how long that they were infectious, you know, out to 20 plus days. But it is pretty evident based on this paper why that happens. Because instead of having IgG1 and IgG3, which are important in viral clearance, this paper proves that after not the second, how much IgG4 you have is almost non-detectable. But by the third, after the first two, it's 0.04%. And then it becomes 20% after the third vaccination. And interestingly enough, it almost seems like people that got infected after the second vaccination are better off now instead of getting the booster. Is that it seems like the reinfection or the infection after your second shot actually finally gave you real immunity. But it seems like if you were boosted and had this conversion over to IgG4, you are, I don't know for sure, going to get COVID a lot, but it seems like you're going to keep getting it for a while based on the percentage of antibodies in your body that really don't do a darn thing for clearance. And the other thing is that IgG4 antibodies have never been seen with any vaccination in history.
None.
And it's only been seen in people with chronic weird infections. And a lot of times it leads to things like the C word, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, cancer. But backing up just for a second, very simply, what you're saying is never have we seen a vaccine cause the immune system to change the way your immunity responds to whatever pathogen. But the difference is the amount of IgG 4 is because of the amount of spike protein that your body is exposed to after you receive these jabs, not after an infection.
Yeah.
Not after an infection.
Yeah, interestingly enough, that was the interesting thing they found. It wasn't the infection. So they're starting to, they're kind of, again, trying to come up with, this is probably keeping some immunologist and virologist up at night, hopefully. But the fact that exposure to the virus itself through the infection doesn't do this, but it might have to do with the mRNA that is likely stuck in the germinal centers, which is a fancy word for your lymph nodes or places that there's replication. And they actually say, interestingly enough, in this paper, a paper that's in Science Immunology, straight from the gods of science themselves, that maybe the fact that the mRNA stayed around a lot longer than they thought it did is contributing to this.
Mm-hmm. And one of this guy that writes Rintra, R-I-N-T-R-A-H, he has his own website that he evaluates this, and I'd never seen this guy, but seems to have a lot of good points. It probably has something to do with us ridding our bodies of the most competent IgG antibody, 1 and 3, against this virus, replacing it with one we use to tolerate stuff like pollen, peanut proteins, or bee venom. So the body is trying to say this stuff is bad, but I can't kill it right now because it's just too overwhelming. We'll deal with it in another way, and that other way is not going to be good. And so this Rinrata, or whoever wrote the Rintra, who wrote this article, wrote a subsequent article yesterday, and he talks about this avalanche of cancer and disease coming our way from this abnormal, very, very rare, unseen, unique response that these new technology vaccines, as they're called, cause in our bodies. Yeah, it's just amazing that they didn't know this or would not have predicted this if they were true scientists before they imposed it on billions of people. So in Rintra's article, it says a very interesting statement that basically the body is trying to find a way to deal with this spike protein. And it relegates it from the IgG3 and IgG1 to the IgG4 pathway. It's just, sorry for being too technical for some of y'all, but the fact is it's trying to survive and put the body in a situation where it can handle it in a different manner. Unfortunately, that different manner is what's going to lead to an avalanche of cancers and diseases that we have begun to see in across the world with the higher death rates, overall death rates, especially in the young healthy people.
The amazing thing is that when they compared this to data from people that got the Johnson & Johnson or some of the other adenovector viruses like the AstraZeneca, they didn't see it. So this is something that's unique to mRNA. Again, I mean, we at least knew more about the adenovector, the adenoviral vector vaccine. The spike protein is a spike protein. But and so basically in this article, it said, furthermore, we observed significantly higher IgG4 levels after two doses of the mRNA vaccine compared to a heterologous immunization regimen with the primary varia series, which is something different. But it is currently not clear whether or to what extent the community mRNA vaccine or the short-lived interval immunization are responsible for the observed long-lasting germinal center reactions, but a prolonged presence of vaccine mRNA or antigen in the lymph node might be a potential explanation. Again, I thought What do you mean that? Did they say a prolonged presence? Well, that would have been canceled by Twitter previous to Musk taking over. So
right.
This is
Science Journal itself, Nature's Own statements, and they're coming out with more and more of these. What's so sad is a lot of times they will obscure the realities of the study by just making false statements in the conclusion. But if you read the studies, it's clear that they know what's happening. They're just avoiding the admissions of
it. So it basically says, in summary, our study demonstrates an mRNA vaccine-induced antiviral IgG4 antibody response appearing late after second immunization. Further investigations are needed to clarify the precise immunological mechanisms driving the response and to evaluate whether an IgG4-driven antibody response affects subsequent viral infections and booster vaccinations. This is not only relevant for potential future vaccine campaigns against SARS-CoV-2, but also for new mRNA-based vaccine development against other pathogens. Basically, they're saying we might have found out that we shouldn't use mRNA at all.
Which is
good news to my ears. Again, mRNA is a technology, I'm not anti-mRNA. I am, as a vaccination mechanism, it is, at this point, we don't understand it enough to utilize it, which is, being shown every day.
Yeah, as Robert Malone said, this clearly should have been in the category of a biological agent based on prior studies and prior research on this type of science. It's categorized as a biological agent, not as a classic vaccine, as they forced it on us.
All right. Well, we will be back after this. Again, this is Dr. Stuart Tinkersley, Dr. Jordan Vaughn on America Out Loud Pulse. Always one beat ahead.
Cold and flu season is here. Wouldn't it be great if you had a way to minimize airborne viral threats? Well, now there is, and it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray called Cofix RX. You might even say it's just what the doctor ordered. To reduce your chance of getting hurt, you wear a safety belt when you're driving. To limit sun damage, you wear sunscreen on the beach. Cofix RX is just like that. It's an additional layer of protection. It's sold by thousands of pharmacists and medical doctors nationwide. It's made right here in the USA. Again, it's a povidone iodine-based antiviral nasal spray. You've heard them talk about it here on the Out Loud Network over and over again. Check out CofixRx.com. That's CofixRx.com for a retailer near you, or use coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off at CofixRx.com.
For 40 years, alarmists have been warning of a climate catastrophe, yet none of their dire predictions have come true. Temperatures have not soared, sea level rise has not been unusual, and extreme weather events have not increased in either frequency or intensity. In short, there is no climate emergency. For 15 years, the International Climate Science Coalition has led the call for climate realism and a Made in America climate plan. A plan based on real science that responds to the real-world needs of Americans, supports economic growth, and strengthens our essential infrastructure. A plan that protects the environment and ensures that Americans can enjoy the blessings of clean air, clean land, and clean water for generations to come. It's time to put ideology and pseudoscience aside. It's time for a sensible climate plan. For more information or to donate, visit our website, icsc-climate.com.
So welcome back. I am Dr. Stuart Tankersley with co-president Jordan Vaughn of concerneddoctors.org. Glad you're joining us today with America Out Loud Pulse. And this is the year-end wrap-up for our podcasts. And we're thankful to Dr. McCullough for asking us to be a part of his search and quest for truth and explanation of it. I think in listening to the other authors or hosts on America Out Loud Pulse, we are honored to be associated with them. We're just trying to do to reveal, to expose the truths as we see it from a physician, practicing physician's point of view. And the damages that have been done, I think so many things that were sworn to us 3 years, 2 years ago about the vaccines in particular have proven to be false and lies. And we're so thankful that the general public, over almost, it's right around 90% of the people in America, have not gotten the booster vaccines, the bivalent vaccine that came out almost 4 months ago. Only 10% or so have received it, and we are so thankful that they are not buying into the lies anymore. It's transparent that, to me, the evidence is overwhelming. Nobody's trusting the government in the handling of this. Hopefully there will be a reckoning of that so that we can deal with it. And of course, the answer, as we've said many times before, the answer to all, to waking up and accepting the lies that we have been a part of, maybe complicit in, as a individual, we need to repent of that. And as the church needs to repent of its engagements and beliefs and following of the lies and the shutdowns and things like that, and believing, for example, that these vaccines are a gift from God, couldn't be further from the truth. That is not true. The evidence is overwhelming, like we've talked about today. These vaccines are certainly not a gift from a loving God. But the fear that led to so many bad decisions and that allowed people to take our country down so many bad roads, and not only our country, but the world. And we've led the world down along with CCP. We've been skipping together hand in hand with each other, I should say, and destroying the world, destroying lives. And the answer starts with repentance, and we are hopeful and prayerful that will happen. But looking back over the past year, Tucker Carlson said last week on a monologue, the year of lies, and the year of lies in COVID with this horrible catastrophe. Brett Weinstein, who was on that panel with Governor DeSantis 2 weeks ago, said this is the biggest catastrophe in human history. And this is a very, very bright, educated evolutionary biologist. And I agree with him. I think it is truly a travesty. I'd say the worst, of course, was the biting of the apple, but this is certainly up there as since that horrible event. The past year, the lies of the past year, they need to be dealt with. They need to be acknowledged. Reckoning needs to happen. And that's kind of where I would sum up the past year in as regards to COVID is. What would you like to add, Jordan?
Yeah, I mean, I think it goes back again to when you're, you know, when you're grounded in understanding what matters, first of all, and then when that goes against whatever the government is telling you to do, that's a time for contemplation. And I think when we were at the FLCCC conference, we became good friends with a guy who was a psychiatrist in New Jersey. And interestingly enough, he told me he came to the conference just to make sure that actually Pierre Corey and Paul Merrick actually existed. Because from what he could tell, the whole world had gone mad. And the only people speaking sanity were Paul and Pierre. But of note, this guy, I think, grew up in Hungary. And I'll say it's among a lot of the people that I think are the quickest to recognize, or their BS meter goes up quickest, is people from the old Eastern Bloc. And many of them are great physicians in our communities and are brilliant people. But they have seen BS from government. And I think we were talking about this earlier, why it's hard for Americans to, you know, believe not necessarily the conspiracy theories, but that your government is against you. Well, I'll tell you one thing. The people from the old Eastern Bloc, it is not hard for them to believe a government is against them because they lived it. And that among the people that were the first to kind of, you know, put up their flag and say, this doesn't this doesn't sound right. This doesn't look right. This doesn't taste right. Even my neighbor down the street is from Poland, very smart physician. She's one of the few around here in Mountain Brook that was like, this doesn't pass the sniff test. And again, I think it comes from the fact that as Americans, we are very easily deceived by our government. And heck, even the churches were deceived by our government. Easier than you would have ever imagined, from a place that prides itself on our individualism and our ability to state that we are free. And I think that's something that really kind of hit home this year was, you know, sometimes, you know, saying you're free is not the same as understanding what it means or when you're getting duped. And I think a lot of people have realized they've been duped. And it's a hard pill to swallow. I think even one of our episodes not too long ago is to think the unthinkable. And I think that is a lot of what Western culture has to realize is the government, especially in the medical sciences, is not all benevolent. It is filled with, just like everything, whether it's church or anything, because of the fall, it's filled with fallen men who are selfish and also like to rule over each other. I think, you know, any student of history would tell you that.
Jordan, last night I was watching one of my sons, a 2-hour documentary on World War II. And I majored in history and read 4 biographies on Winston Churchill. Just he and John Paul II were my two favorite historical figures of the 20th century. And Churchill was screaming against the stupid of Chamberlain and the rest of them, the people and the intelligent, the smart people who thought they could deal with the lies of Hitler. They could deal with him. He wasn't really that crazy. And then finally they had to acknowledge, yep, Churchill had it right. We have to deal with him. We have to deal with him directly. Unfortunately, I hope we don't take the path of Churchill. What I mean by that is Churchill wrote a wonderful long series of books on the history of England. He had a great passion and love for his country, for the history of his country. I do as well. I'm sure you do as well.
And not only that, he understood what made his country unique, which is right, why England was the ultimate foe for Hitler. But anyway, so.
Yeah, but at the end of when it was all said and done, he defeated Hitler, but it was with the destruction of the empire, of the British Empire. In other words, yes, he defeated the foe in the short term, but he didn't maintain the integrity of his country. Why? And the reason is because his country had lost its integrity by turning its back on God. I hope that whoever leads our country out of this disaster and this disastrous generation that you and I have grown up in, I hope that whoever leads us out of this doesn't take the exact same tack as Churchill in the sense that they ignore spiritual underpinnings of why our country is so unique and what made it so unique in its founding. And I think that is hopefully the lesson learned, that somebody, whether the Lord will allow there to be a leader that will not be ashamed of calling him Lord and lead us out of this disaster and out of the deceptions and lies over the last generation with the classic, the worst example of their hubris and arrogance and lies that they so exist in, that they will force us to exist in. That hopefully they will come out and say, we were wrong, our culture has been wrong, we have abandoned the Lord who has given us the freedoms that we have, inalienable rights, as our founding fathers called them. And then that will allow us to get out of the traps we're in. And it will be a change, it will be challenging, it will be hard, it will be worth it. And that's what I hope we see in the coming days in 2023. Will America turn around and face the reality of what we've done to ourselves and our posterity?
Yeah, it'll be, you know, I mean, I think as an empire, America's days are definitely, we're closer to the end than the beginning or the middle. But
it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be that way. But you know, the Lord, you know, puts favor on people for the time that he needs them to have favor. And I think it's not always that way. So, you know, the Lord can chastise us. The Lord can, you know, and come back, or he can move on to whatever his eventual plan is for all of humanity. So, I mean, I'd say it's not something that I've wanted for our country or our kids. But again, the Lord's in control, even in that, you know, in that predicament. So, but I think Winston Churchill, yes, you're correct. His love, and he was a man of, you know, kind of the church in some ways. He's knowledgeable about it. I'm not sure what his, where his eternal soul is. His love was for his country. And that sometimes is the downfall, even in our own politics. But I think the church assumes that it's the, you know, that America and God are on the same, you know, God has favor for America. Yes, he can have favor for America when he wants to have favor for America. But we are no way Israel or the Israelites. We are we are just a creation of man that he may use. So
yeah, and just reflecting on this past year, I'm reminded of what was allowed for it, this past summer, when the Lord could have never allowed abortion to be legalized in our country. He could have taken away abortion legally 10 years ago. He could have done it 10 years from now. But in the middle of the big, awful pandemic lies, the Lord, good Lord, gave us a reminder of who's in charge.
Yep.
He overturned the murdering of unborn babies. He overturned that atrocious law. So he still reigns. He still sits on his throne. He's not alarmed. I mean, he's not unaware of all of this. It's just what he's begging us to do is turn to him. And that's a wonderful reminder of who's in charge. It seems like we are responsible for everything when and by ignoring his dominion. But it's all to his glory.
Yeah,
it is all to his glory. That
there's
he
no question he still does what he wants to do. So,
And in the worst year possible, he just reminded us, gave us a little wink. Let's do away with abortion. And it's just wonderful. It's the hope that we have. It's the only hope we all should have. The foundational hope of truth and love that he has given us, and we're thankful more than anything for it.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, this is even not necessarily biblical at all, but I've been reading the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, but anyway, not... I'm not reading them like I would read scripture. I just find it fascinating to read about a man who had everything in the world, but probably was what he least wanted was to be emperor. But it was interesting for him to say he couldn't imagine living life without knowing of the afterlife and the gods. And again, obviously, his afterlife and the gods he was talking about were not the true God, but it's a different reality than living a atheistic human at all consequence. Only thing that matters is what's in front of us, and I think a lot of our culture has gone to that, and that's a recipe for disaster. Even cultures,
and it's a laziness. It's fundamentally a laziness, yeah. If you look at it from that, from one
but
perspective.
Even unChristian cultures, cultures that are followed, like, you know, Islam, and they, if you believe in a creator and a moral code or law, your ability to really have a government and have people that abide by that government actually works. It doesn't work in any other facet. And when you become a humanist, the biggest question, or an atheist, is where do the moral code, which is basically the foundations of what our law is, come from?
Because that's right.
As we're finding out now with what a man and a woman are, once you start down that path, really all of it is meaningless, I guess, as Ecclesiastes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It is a laziness, because it's a rejection of God fundamentally. It's a hatred of Jesus, but it's a laziness. I can't go there. It's a pride and laziness that won't allow them to just say, wait a minute, Lord, if you're there, if you are real, let me humble myself before you and seek your will. And he will make it happen that moment. It's the hope, the guarantee that he gives us. If we put our trust in Jesus, Jesus alone, as our author and perfecter of our faith, he will transform your life. He will transform our country's life. He will transform the world. And that's just what our fundamental hope is for.
And I will say, at least in our case, at least in my case, over the last 3 years, he'll also let you know wisdom about what the right thing to do is. And I think if you will look among the men that stood up against this medical tyranny, there's a unifying theme, and most of them are God-fearing men.
Do you really? This would be a question. If you are a non-believer, and you are let's say you're a liberal, do you want to live in a culture who is ruled by people who don't fundamentally even understand there is a difference between a woman and a man?
Well, Marcus Aurelius, a pagan, would say, heck no.
I think it's just an insane idea.
So, all right, well, we will end with that. I wish everyone a Merry Christmas and everyone a Happy New Year. We are thankful for the platform that we have been given by Malcolm here, and the ability to openly speak, as the last 3 years have proven. The ability to speak openly is something that we need to cherish.
And Jordan, I just want to say, end the year by telling you how much I thank you and appreciate you. And I'm so honored and glad to be on the same team with you in this fight, because you've been a true warrior, and I'm thankful for you.
Same thing back to you, Stuart. I've enjoyed getting to know you. Actually, the only benefit of the pandemic is that me and Stuart were brought together from different cities in Alabama. So, all right, you have a good night, everyone. And again, this is America Out Loud Pulse, always one beat ahead.